Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Professor Adrian Puren. He's acting executive director of the National Institute for Communicable Diseases. Should we be concerned about a new variant called Mu? And that's not M-O-O, that is M-U. Professor, good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning, Howard. You're in fine fettle there.
I don't think I'd survive a day in this seat if I wasn't in fine fettle. But but thank you anyway. All right. So this I think it was the World Health. No, was it Fauci or the World Health Organization? One of them said to us that they were keeping a very close eye on Mu. Is it something to be concerned about? Tell us about it.
Yes. Yeah, so as you know, how the classification that the WHO uses, and I think other organizations use, is, for example, variants of concern. And those are variants that have widespread transmission, but obviously have marked effects in terms of specific outcomes. They're shown to be highly transmissible, as well as and or, for example, are escape mutants, variants, and or severe disease. Variants of interest, and this is where the Mu variant fits into, is a variant of interest in that there's widespread transmissibility and there's a constellation of mutations that are noted that are common to those variants that have, for example, been demonstrated to show higher transmissibility or escape mutations or severe disease outcomes. So for the moment, it certainly is widespread, primarily in South America, I think in the United States and a few other countries. But I think it was at Colombia specifically where it had a high degree of presence in terms of its proportion of the variants in circulation. But worldwide, it's actually a very small proportion of the total number of variants. So Delta is still the dominant one. So it's a variant of interest, but no concern at this particular point because it's not even in circulation in South Africa, and there's no evidence, there's very limited evidence about those mutations and outcomes. And I think we've got the vaccines that have been shown to be effective against those particular mutations, at least, yes.
Can a new variant get wiped out by an older variant? Or is it always a further development of an existing variant?
Yes, so I think some variants will die out, as it were, from an evolutionary perspective, because their routes for transmission, especially in the context of, say, the Delta is a good example of that, which Delta is highly transmissible. It has what is called an effective R of between 5 and 9, for example, compared to the earlier variants, which had an R value of about 2. So you can just imagine if you're looking at a competition in terms of a transmission chain, that ultimately that Delta variant will become the dominant variant in terms of a competition. So if there are no routes for you to, if there are no routes for this virus to transmit, then it will obviously die out, and then you'll only have the dominant variant, like the Delta variant has become the dominant variant.
Right. The fact that this comes from South America, does that play a role at all, given that, for example, the trade, the travel between India and South Africa is quite significant, whereas with South America, it is less so. Does that make it less of a concern for us, or is that irrelevant because it'll ultimately, if it is a variant like Delta, with the, I don't know, the strength or the transmissibility of a Delta variant, that it would land up here anyway?
Yes, I think variants obviously do travel along as people travel and move along in terms of the connection. So there may not be a direct link to South America necessarily with specific countries, but because of other travel to, let's say, the UK, United States, and other ports where there are contacts, then that would lead to the entry of this particular variant if it were to become more dominant or more widespread. So I think New Zealand is a good example of a country that really tried and is trying to restrict and have so-called safe bubbles with Australia. But consequence still is that the Delta variant has entered into New Zealand. And what are the consequences of that, especially in a context where vaccination levels are not sufficiently high enough? So there again, they've gone back to a lockdown in order to try and manage that. and I presume obviously to get high vaccination rates as best as is possible. Mm. So it comes back, Howard, to the fact that, you know, given our scenarios, I think we still need to emphasize again those tropes of the non-pharmaceutical interventions and really, really encourage people to vaccinate in larger and larger numbers, especially in those vulnerable age categories. Yes,
we've been
is our best way in which we can manage this whole pandemic is really to try and have an extensive, you know, universal vaccination campaign. Yes,
I'm interested in your thoughts, and I've been debating this with our listeners this morning, that the World Health Organization have asked for a moratorium on booster jabs until 2022, and whereas it sounds like a lofty ideal, I just wonder, and I would love your thoughts on it, if this is something of value. Surely, if you've got a vaccinated population who are losing protection, you would boost them to maintain that protection rather than letting them lose it whilst we give first shots to people around the world. What is your approach to that?
In a way, I am sympathetic to the WHO approach. I think it's essentially because I think the variants that are arising need to be managed and controlled. And the way in which we would achieve that, obviously, is by, as I said, an expanded vaccine program. At the same time, one is concerned that there is some scientific evidence that there is some waning of immunity, but are there other components to that immune response that will be sufficient to allow for protection? Again, I think we focus a great deal on the antibody response. And what do we understand by that waning antibody response? Are there other components that will be as protective as that antibody response? I think we really need to understand that clearly, I think, before we make those decisions around, for example, booster vaccinations. And then I think focusing on particular categories where that may be appropriate, you know, whether it be healthcare workers, older age groups with and without comorbidities, people who have immune deficiencies or are immune suppressed, for example. So maybe our approach may be very selective, in other words, in terms of applying boosters.
Right. What was interesting,
but I think the overall approach from my perspective is really try and really maximize the numbers that are going to be vaccinated. Yes.
What's interesting to me is how quickly Israel seems to have turned the corner on their fourth wave by using boosters, which shows that the results are very, very quick. It would seem that the results are very quick from the booster shots.
Yeah, so that's a good example of, you know, a country that has the longer experience, if I understood correctly, in terms of countries that have been implementing vaccination. So again, there's this, so I'm not against the science around that. And I think if I understand in Israel, it's really focusing on specific categories of people rather than simply boosting everyone.
They have changed it now that they are, I believe, boosting, I believe that they are boosting everybody. In fact, I think if you, because it's quite interesting, my son happens to be here from Israel at the moment, and if you are within 5 months of your second Pfizer shot, you are actually considered unvaccinated. So when he goes back, he will have missed his 5 month, that window, which means he's got to go into full quarantine as though he's an unvaccinated person. So it is quite interesting. And he's a young guy in his 20s. So they are expecting people now to vaccinate as they try and prevent the fourth wave. So it's just interesting to see the different approaches and to see what works and what doesn't work.
Absolutely. So as I said, I think that approach is possibly helpful, but I think we really need to understand more fully what is the protective immune response rather than just focusing on one aspect of an immune response. Yes.
Absolutely. And that's where we leave it, Professor Adrian Puren. Thank you as always.